Daniel, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Excellent, thank you. How is Simon?
Simon's doing okay. He had a little bicycle accident, but he'll be back with us in no time.
I have no doubt nothing's going to keep him away from his mission in life. Let's just talk about UNRWA funding. I know that that you did quite a lot of work on this. Netanyahu is he's got involved in this and come up with his own suggestions. Will you give us a bit of a background on this?
Yeah, well, you know, the press has been presenting this as if Israel was trying to just eliminate all funding for Palestinian refugees and really harm people, which is not the story at all. And the press has actually, for the most part, been leaving out some critical information. I think first it's important to understand the difference between UNRWA and UNHCR. UNRWA is an aid agency set up to serve only Palestinians. UNHCR, which is the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, serves all other refugees in the world. So it's this anomaly that Palestinians are served separately from all other refugees in the world. And what Netanyahu was actually saying was he was quietly encouraging Trump to not cut funding to Palestinian refugees, and in fact, to instead transfer the funding from UNRWA to UNHCR so that Palestinians would be treated in the same way that all other refugees are and in accordance with relevant international laws, such as the 1951 Refugee Convention. Now, there are some major disadvantages to UNRWA, and this is the reason why. UNRWA, first of all, considers all Palestinians of all generations to be refugees, even if they're citizens of other countries, even if they've built new lives, even if they've built good careers, even if they haven't been refugees themselves, but only their grandparents or great-great-grandparents were refugees. And this produces some anomalous results. For example, a Senate a study showed that according to the standards of international law, there are 30,000 Palestinian refugees in the world. But according to UNRWA, they do the math differently and they come up with 5 million. There are other problems.
That's not a rounding error.
No, it's not a rounding error. It's because they calculate if somebody, say, moved to the United States, got citizenship, had great-grandchildren, those great-grandchildren who have been American citizens their whole lives and who have whole other lives still count as refugees. And so it's different than the image you have in your mind of somebody, you know, living in a tent. Now, of course, I don't mean to diminish. There are Palestinians who are living in tents, but to a great extent that's because surrounding countries have refused to integrate them in the way all of the refugees in the world get integrated over time, including, by the way, the 800,000 Jews who were evicted from the Arab countries where they had their homes. So UNRWA has some other problems too. They've been using funding for textbooks that say all sorts of horrible things about Jews and about Israel. They say that Jews have no connection to the land of Israel. In some of these textbooks, they show maps that don't have Israel on them at all. And we've seen a number of cases of rockets for Hamas rockets and missiles being stored in the basements of UNRWA schools. And so for this and many other reasons, a number of UNRWA employees on social media have been praising Hitler. This is the kind of organization we're talking about. So Netanyahu's saying we should move the funding to a more reputable organization that handles all other refugees in the world. But the press has been positing this as if Israel was trying to undermine Palestinian refugees and really harm people, which just really isn't the case at all. So we've been following up on that quite a lot this week. It's been a hot topic for us.
Absolutely, no doubt. Abbas's speech must be another hot topic because that one was filled with the most horrible rhetoric. Give us some sense of this.
Well, yeah, he had a 2.5-hour speech, which if you're trying to follow it as a reporter, it's pretty rambling and it's a lot to listen to. And a lot of reporters, they're more concerned in how this speech relates to the United States or how it relates to issues of a peace process moving forward. And so a lot of them neglected to mention some of the issues related to Israel, where he says that Israel wasn't formed as a country for the Jewish people. Jews have no connection to the land of Israel. It was a colonial project. He even forged a quote by Theodore Herzl, saying Theodore Herzl said that he had to exterminate all the Palestinian people. Mm. Herzl never said that. It's not clear where he got the idea from. It seems that he just simply made it up. most of the mainstream media didn't address these things at all. Some of them did address it, but downplayed it significantly. And this is significant because even if your focus is peace process, it's important to understand that this is the position and the thoughts of the leader of the Palestinian Authority government. And this is the government that we consider the moderates, as opposed to Hamas, who are unabashedly in favor of destroying Israel and killing Jews. So it's important that the media address this, and they really haven't been, and that's something that we're writing about right now today, and we're getting content out, and we're also going to be getting a petition out. And if we can get a good bunch of thousands of signatures on this petition, we're really hoping to get at least 10,000 signatures. If we can do that, we're going to deliver this to the Foreign Press Association in Israel and really inform the reporters who work there that their work is noticed by people in the world, that their credibility is on the line when they don't do their job right, and that this isn't just a few people in an office in Jerusalem complaining. This is really a lot of viewers and news readers. So all of your readers should keep an eye out for that on the Honest Absolutely. Reporting website and email list. And this is one of these opportunities where we can really make a difference.
Right, so we'll make sure to share it to our You're Often In with Howard Feldman's Facebook page, and we're going to ask our listeners if they can please make sure that they sign that and make sure that gets done. What was interesting to me about Abbas's speech, and we've been talking about this over the last 2 days, is certainly even last week, I was getting a sense that because of the fact that Trump, to a large extent, is trying to curtail some of Abbas's behavior, some of the Palestinian Authority's behavior, he's raised expectations from them in terms of actually sitting down and having a discussion around peace. The Palestinian Authority, in my view, seems to be floundering. They're throwing their toys. They're reacting in all sorts of ways. And the metaphor that I keep thinking of is as they get curtailed, so they are reacting more and more aggressively, and sometimes quite stupidly, because the Sunday's speech, the 2 hour ramblings, were actually a little bit deranged in some way. It also took the Palestinian cause back many, many steps, because what it did is reveal some of the hatred, the bias, and anti-Semitism that surrounds criticism of Israel. What are your thoughts on that? Is he acting out? Has he lost his mind?
You know, certainly he said the phrase to Donald Trump, Yechreb Beitak, which I'm mispronouncing, but it's Arabic for may your house be demolished. And that doesn't just mean your physical home, but may the house of Trump or possibly the house of America be demolished. I don't think I've ever heard a world leader say that to the United States unless they were an outright enemy of America. That's just not something that you hear. Even the Soviet Union didn't speak that way toward the American president. So it does seem like a very dramatic statement. And it's all the more puzzling why the press, in many cases, wrote headlines saying that Abbas considers it a great slap in the face that Trump declared Jerusalem as Israel's capital. It sounds so much more measured and reasonable of an opinion, even if you don't agree with it, than what Abbas actually said. Now, to be fair, Trump hasn't released his peace plan yet, so we don't actually know what it is. And also, to be fair, I don't know what Abbas is thinking in his brain at the moment he says these things, but he certainly has said a lot of things that are highly dramatic and that you just simply don't hear in diplomatic circles. So, you know, I saw one commentary of someone speculating maybe this is sort of his valedictorian speech where he's wrapping up his career by blaming all of the things he didn't accomplish on everyone he can think of. But again, we're into the realm of speculation at that point.
Absolutely right. The IDF destroyed a terror tunnel leading out of Gaza, and tell us about that kind of a tell us about the coverage that received.
Well, you know, it's something that's just so significant. This isn't just any terror tunnel. This is a tunnel that is under one of the major border crossings out of Gaza and into Israel, where millions of tons of food and medical supplies and building materials are transferred every year by Israel, under the supervision of Israel, but from donors all over the world and through the International Red Cross. The tunnel was under it. So imagine, Israel's now faced with this impossible dilemma of blow up this crossing and end up blowing up the access that Palestinians have to all of this foreign aid, or leave the tunnel intact, which puts Israeli civilians in danger. And Israel almost miraculously managed to pull off an entirely third option, which was go in there and destroy the tunnel and keep intact all of the infrastructure that's above it. That is an enormous accomplishment, and it's a tremendous, I'd say, act of courage and humanitarianism to go in there, put people at risk, and manage to accomplish that. That was almost not covered in the international press at all. They said that my favorite piece was a piece from the from Euronews, where they said that the tunnel was a so-called, that Israel calls it a, quote, terror tunnel, when in fact it's not just something Israel says. It's very easy to verify that these tunnels are used for military purposes, and that in the past Hamas has sent soldiers through there to harm Israeli civilians, or at least with the intent of harming Israeli civilians. They've always been stopped. And the other thing that the Euronews item said was that that these tunnels are frequently used to transport needed items into Gaza, making no mention of the fact that that's not what these particular tunnels are usually used for, and also making no mention of the fact that tremendous amounts of needed items are transferred through the very crossing that this tunnel was built under for the very purpose of putting that crossing in danger and creating a dilemma for Israel. Most of the news was a little bit better than that, but there has been just a lack of emphasis on how dangerous these tunnels are and how much Hamas intentionally puts its own civilians in danger in order to create these difficult dilemmas for Israel to choose between protecting Israeli civilians and protecting Palestinian civilians.
Daniel, do you think that it is a deliberate, there's deliberate cognitive dissonance, or it's deliberately ignored, the fact that so much of the humanitarian aid funding, so much of the humanitarian aid funding is being diverted towards terror tunnels and not being used for hospitals, for education, for infrastructure development, etc. You never see the link, or not never, but it's very rare in the press to see that anybody making that link. Now, either it's just lazy journalism, or it's deliberate, or it genuinely hasn't occurred to them. What's your thought?
You know, it's always the big question. What are people thinking? And I always emphasize that when we say the word the media, that's an industry made up of hundreds of companies with thousands of employees. We work with some journalists who are very professional but are just under a lot of time pressure. We know some journalists who really are hateful and have a specific agenda, and even a few who actually are anti-Semitic. It does happen from time to time. But I'd say the most common thing you see in journalism these days, particularly given the time pressure and lack of ability to get resources for research, is that people go into a situation thinking that they understand it and taking whatever facts come up and fitting it into the picture that they already have. So, for example, if we're talking about, say, North Korea, you know, you and I sort of already have the idea that Kim Jong-un is a pretty bad actor, and almost anything that someone would accuse him of, we'd probably think to ourselves, okay, that's probably true. Given that if I have a lot of time and I'm thinking as a lawyer, you know, I'm in my previous life, I was a lawyer, and I guess I still am. I call myself a recovering lawyer. As a lawyer, I would say to myself, all right, well, I'm going to check all this out. I hear these things about Kim Jong-un, but I'm going to check it out specifically to make sure it's true. But if I'm on a journalist and I'm under time pressure, and what I've been hearing is that Israel does these horrible things and oppresses Palestinians who are victims, maybe I'm not going to take the time to really check out the story that I have, but just fit those facts into the image that I already have of the overall situation. So that is one phenomenon that we see happening. But there are some journalists who really do try their best, and some who even from time to time really do succeed. So I should give credit where credit is due.
Absolutely right. And that is Daniel Pomerantz. He's the senior editor at Honest Reporting, speaking to us from Jerusalem. Daniel, thank you for making yourself available at such short notice. Keep up
my
fantastic work.